My name is Mark, and I'm an alcoholic. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and recovering alcoholics around the world. It is now time for our featured speaker of the evening. This is brought to you by the Valley Group of Alcoholics Anonymous, the undefeated, undisputed king of speaker meetings. Tonight's event is brought to you for your sobriety pleasure. And now, let's get ready for recovery! This sober member has been in the fellowship since 1999. He has been a long-standing board member of the Fresno Fellowship and active in the Fourth Dimension Group for 6 years, in addition to secretarying numerous meetings. For his AA philosophy, he refers to page 103 of our book. Look it up. And now, with all the earnestness at your command, will you welcome, please, from Fresno, California, Jerry J.
What an announcement. I'll tell you what. You know, I come up here and, I had thought a little bit about what I would say and details, and I decided to heck with it. I'm just going to tell it how it was. And it's interesting. There's some people in this room. There's one that I've known for a long time out of the Fresno Fellowship. When I first saw that senator again, I thought, there's no way that this guy will ever get sober. You know, there were a few bets against it, and by golly, he's been sober for a while. Okay? And it's interesting. We all do it a different way. The big book is a guide. It gets us there. It tells us how to live a life that's somewhat compatible with society. It has to have a spiritual base. And once we have that, we have a base to operate on to begin to change our lives. I was in French Morocco in 1956. I had joined the Air Force. Went when I was first stationed at Sampson Air Force Base in basic training. That's where I found out about beer, what it tasted like, and how to enjoy it. And in the state of New York, when you were 18 years old, you could drink anything you wanted. Okay. And so I began to drink some beer, but not much. Didn't amount to anything. Went from there to was stationed in Rapid City, South Dakota, which is the craziest place I've ever had in my life. They assigned me to a military, assigned me to a squadron, didn't exist anymore. Go from there down to Riverside. Anyhow, I ended up in French Morocco. Well, over there, the booze was cheap. Very cheap. We'd set up, put together two of us with a 40-ounce jug of Canadian Club and kill it in the evening. Okay? Did that quite a few times. Well, we're doing all kinds of things. We're flying some air sea rescue kind of things was being done. So you'd take the oxygen so you could fly around, hang out of the side of a helicopter once in a while and take some pictures. You name it, but we got away with it. But I realized at that point I had a problem. My entire family was full of alcoholics. There were about three or four, and depending on, you know, some of them I don't know, haven't kept up with, or didn't keep up with them at that time, about three or four that weren't alcoholics. Other ones were just loaded with them, everywhere. Part of that is the fact there's a heavy Indian background. My grandmother was a full-blooded Seneca Indian, and those of you who have studied it a bit, we have a problem. There's an Indian background. Our liver does not process alcohol well. Okay? In fact, it's inherited. Okay? And that's not an excuse, but it gave me a propensity to be an addict and an alcoholic. Well, anyhow, I came back to the States, did pretty well, but lots of drinking. All the time. Anytime we had a chance, we're out drinking. Never got a single drunk driving ticket. I came so close one time, it was ridiculous. It was Denver, Colorado, driving down the road, and I was stinking drunk, okay? Cop pulled me over, said, he says, you got a burnout taillight. Would you please make sure you get that fixed? And I had a California plate on, and so I didn't do anything. I drove away. You know, and I look at that, and I didn't think anything of it then, okay? There were all sorts of times I should have been arrested as a drunk driver. I wrecked two cars, okay? One of which, the guy driving the other way, was as drunk as I was, okay? So who cares? We both pulled away and had our cars fixed, okay? Now, you look at that. I got arrested for drunk driving one time. Pulled me over, took me down to Madera, checked me in. He says, well, your alcohol level's not that high. It took a while to get there, and I thought, well, maybe it's happening. Well, guess what? The next day I had a blood damage in the side of my head, and I had a mild stroke, really, equivalent of a stroke. And it wasn't quite the same, and details are not of importance. But one of the reasons I was driving bad was because of that, okay? It's the only time I was ever pulled over from driving, ever. So I went on after I got out of the service. Went to school at Arizona State. Pretty good student. Went to crank through Arizona State in less than 4 years. Okay. Moved from there back to Ohio because my mother had some problems, and went to school there again in Kent State. Drinking all the time. I worked for Ernst & Ernst after I got out of Arizona State. Boy, you talk about a drinking party. All the time. Somebody, in fact, we had a speaker that I had his tape the other day. He was a social drinker. Yeah, I was a social drinker. You know, let's drink. I said, so shall I. You know, it's that kind of thing. You know? I have pretty good capacity for it. I could drink quite a bit, okay, compared to other people. Really didn't have much problem with the wife knowing about it and the family knowing about it, okay? At least they didn't say anything, okay? And as time went on, however, some other things were happening. That is the side I taught at a university, okay? Fresno State. 25 years I spent there. You know, they have these attractive little things called co-eds over there, okay? Well, guess what? There's a whole bunch of them, okay? I was cautious. Got involved a lot, okay? Finally, it blew up my face and destroyed the marriage. But regardless, this thing went on for a long time. It actually had started when I first started teaching at Youngstown State, and then I taught at Kent State for a while. Started when I was at Youngstown State, and I was working on the master's degree there. And one of the guys that I was going to and from school with, his wife was a very attractive lady. So I made arrangements to meet with her on occasion, okay? Now, the question is, why is this important? Well, because it tells you the level at which I deviated from anything that made any goddamn sense at all, because the alcohol said, well, it's okay. You know, you're not going to get caught. Bullshit. Okay? Don't ever leave a motel receipt in your wallet. Oh, that was interesting. Anyway. So I looked at this thing, and I realized suddenly I had a problem. So I started going to the AA meeting. God, I'll never forget the first one I went to. It was Fresno Fellowship. I don't know whether you've ever been there, but they used to meet upstairs in a building on Ashland and Cedar Avenue, which means nothing to you probably, or at least some of you. Meet upstairs. I go in, first AA meeting I ever went to, okay? I go in and sit down, and they got a guy start talking. And I think, where'd this guy come from? Because I mean to tell you, you know, you've been at meetings. This guy was in so far in left field, he didn't know what he was saying. I mean, it made no... I looked at him and I said, what the hell have I gotten myself into? So I thought, well, you know, I'm not going to come back to this place again. And luckily, okay, if you people some time around here, if anything ever happens in a meeting, you look around and you see somebody start to smirk and get upset, go talk to them, okay? Because somebody walked over to me and says, look, that guy comes in here. He comes in here about three nights a week. We let him talk for about 5 minutes, 6 minutes, 7 minutes, get it out of his system, and it's over with, okay? And he'll come back and say the same thing next week, okay? So, you know, then you can make some notes or do something else, okay? And he broke the ice. It was important to me, okay? Well, that didn't solve the problem. But I realized after a few meetings that I really had a problem. So things kind of fell apart, and I go over to Beacon House, okay? Figuring that, that some of you may know that Bob Duncan from Fresno said, yeah, that's a good place to go. So I went over, and I happened to pick the wrong time because they were having some real problems. Some of you know the history of that place. They had some real problems. It was cheap. It was, I think we paid $500 a week with food and everything. But it was falling apart. I mean, they were having some real internal problems. And I stood about 3 weeks of it and left, okay? So I get in the car and I start driving back and I'm pissed off at what's happened. I figure I wasted my time and guess how far I made it, okay? Well, I crossed I-5, found myself a place to drink, okay? And, you know, and I kept trying and trying and trying, okay? I kind of stayed sober for a year, but it was just a dry drunk. So I was sitting here talking tonight with a fellow, and he said, you know, he did it a year and a half. I tried to speak here a couple of weeks, he stayed sober for 2.5 years. And he went about to go nuts, okay? And it'll do it to you. It will flat do it to you, okay? If you want to live an insane life, try it, okay? And those of you that are newcomers, get a sponsor. Do step four as fast as you can, okay? Because recognize step four is just practice. Because you're going to do that inventory the rest of your life, okay? This is just to tell you how to get started and do it, okay? Regardless, so I tried all these things. And then wife and I separated, get a divorce, had a lady move in the house with me. Oh, boy, that was fun. Nice lady, but she's crazy as I am, okay? And she didn't drink. She's crazy, okay? But, you know, so we put that together and went around in crazy circles and so on with that. And that didn't work. So I finally got out of that mess. But in the meantime, there's a place in town in Fresno called The Brig. Now, why is The Brig important? Because a shot is a shot. You know, they don't know what a shot is. Okay? Everything you get in there is double. It's a typical place for us alcoholics to be if you're a drinker, okay? And that's what I did. I hit there at 6 o'clock in the morning. There I am. Okay? Drink till about 9 or 10 o'clock, go home, take a nap, come back and drink in the afternoon, okay? Sit around in the evening and a bottle of vodka, or at that time mostly brandy, and drink brandy in the evening, okay? But getting nowhere, getting absolutely nowhere. Going to meetings, listening, okay? Getting no gain whatsoever, because I didn't understand what I was trying to do. Had no idea. Got a sponsor, nice fellow, okay? He said he's had two people like me in his life he's dealt with, and he said, you know, he couldn't tell me anything, you know? Couldn't tell me shit, because I knew it all, Okay? I knew it all. Nobody could tell me that I had to do 4 and 5 and 6 and what they meant to me. Or at least if they tried to tell me, I didn't listen. Okay? So I went through this whole process. So what happened? Greg all the time, back and forth, going to meetings, you name it, and I did it, okay? Finally, it's interesting, I happened to be talking to my sister in Arizona on the telephone, and the whole world starts going bananas on me. It happened so long ago, I can hardly remember exactly what happened, okay? Other than the fact that I said, you know, I'm sick, I feel like I'm going to throw up, and just like something serious has gone wrong. And she said, hang up and call 911. And I did. Hung up the phone, called 911, okay? They came out. I had a dog that was vicious. That's the only way to describe it, okay? It was an Australian Shepherd, but had been abused, and nobody touched me. So I told them, when they come in the door, I says, careful, that dog will not let you touch me. You're going to have somebody help you. Well, I had a police officer, thought he was able to handle just a little old dog. After he got bit, he realized he couldn't. I'm going to bring somebody in to take care of him. They take me in the hospital. And when I went in the hospital, I was, you know, like I say, it's hard to remember the details. It was that messed up, okay? But I went in, and the doctor came in and checked me. He said, I want you to don't use the toilet, use that stool over there. I said, okay. So I used the stool. So the next morning he came walking in, looked at the stool and said, okay, and walked out. I don't know what the hell's going on now. He didn't say anything, nuts. So the nurse is there and I says, well, is he still in the hospital? She says, yeah. And I said, well, what did he say? She didn't say anything to me. I said, well, find out what's going on. He didn't say anything to me either. And she came back in and he says, he'll see you tomorrow. Okay. Let's check out what's going on. I still don't know. Well, tomorrow morning, real early, he was in there and they started pumping blood and plasma into me. What happened was I formed an ulcer and I was bleeding to death and the liver could not stop the bleeding. Okay? Okay. When that happened, all they can do is start pumping blood into you. Okay? And try to get the bleeding stopped, which they got stopped. Okay. I remember that my son was there, my children were all there, and I didn't even know they were there. Didn't even know they were there. If somebody hadn't told me, I wouldn't have even known. Okay. My sister was there. She flew over from Arizona, and I could communicate with her. But she and a lady who lived next door, down two streets over, as you say, one of our neighbors, I recognized her, could deal with her, and that was it. After about 2 days, I began to put my mind back together so I could tell what was going on. And my sister came in and says, well, the doctor says if you drink a gin, you're going to be a dead man. It's that simple. He didn't tell me that. I told her that. Okay? And I said, well, that scared the shit out of me. Just absolutely scared me. And that's what it took. I had to go that far to find out. So what happened was, I was in there for a few weeks, came out. A friend of mine that the same lady that lived a couple blocks away had gone to Hawaii, and all of a sudden I go to the bathroom in the morning and I'm bleeding again. So I called, she had just come back from Hawaii, And I called her up and I said, "I'm bleeding again. I need transportation. I wasn't able to drive at the time. I was still in a wheelchair." So she said, "I'll be right over." And they came over and took me in. I had a minor operation because of a rupture, and I thought maybe that's where it's coming from. The guy says, "Oh no, it's somewhere else." So they take me in, back to the hospital. He had called the doctor that I had originally talked to, who was not there, wasn't available. So his partner showed up. Now, it's interesting how life puts things together for you. The last time I had seen his partner, kid was about this tall. Okay? I skated competitively for a long time on roller skates. And we did a show number, and this doctor was so little, we were afraid to turn him loose on the floor, so he sat around the fire. And that's this doctor that met me. I didn't know where he was. I didn't know where he had gone. Okay. Walked up to him and I said, "Kevin?" And he says, "Yeah." Because all he has is his last name. He says, "Where do I know you from?" And I told him. Okay. He put me in the liver transplant program. Very shortly after we went in there. Boy, you wanted to have your body tested to see if you're safe to do anything with. They did it. They checked me from one end to the other. Examined me completely. First of all, to find out if I had really quit drinking. I had to go to meetings, turn in the slips all the time. And had tests for alcohol and drugs without warning. They pick up the phone and say, "You have to be tested within the next 3 hours." Okay, you're out. That's it. Okay. I passed all that. I never drank. Still had no drink. Okay. What I did was I changed the kinds of things I'm eating, put on some vitamin approaches, which were favorable to what I was doing. And after about 3.5 years, I got a call from Dr. Kadama, and he said, "I want you to come to my office right away." And I says, "Okay, I don't have an appointment." "That's all right, don't get an appointment." And one of the secretaries in his office used to work at Yolanda Club. She says, "You talk to her and she'll take care of it for you." She says, "Come to the office." I said, "Okay." So she said, "Come on down to his office." So I went down to his office. I sit down at the table. A few minutes, he came walking in and hands me the lab reports. He says, "You can read these as well as I do," because he knew that I always have, anytime I have lab work done, I get a copy of the reports, okay? For a couple reasons. First of all, I want to see them, and then I have them reviewed by a doctor who used to work on liver transplants, who is now in Parkersburg, West Virginia, okay? So he reviews all my stuff, forget Dan, he doesn't even work because I don't have to have them. So he says, "You can read them as well as I do." And I said, "Are these correct?" And he says, "That's why we did them twice." Okay? He says, "Your liver has completely recovered." Okay? Now, what's that tell you? Well, there's a God up there. That's what it tells me. Okay? There is in the big book a little thing that talks about dealing with life and how you run it. And you have to recognize there are things that happen to us sometimes that are a little bit unexplainable. Okay? I could not deal with the spiritual problems with alcoholism. Couldn't deal with it. Why? I grew up in a bunch of churches that were crooks. No question about it. I mean, it was unbelievable. And I was around them. I knew exactly what was going on. Okay? And so, as a result, I had this horrible resistance to religion. Finally, I went to a church, and the guy said, talked about the 11th and 12th commandments. See, there are 11th and 12th. So if you've been around them. Love the Lord thy God with all thy heart and all thy soul and all thy mind and all thy strength. And love thy neighbor as you love yourself. Oh, that sounds like step 11 and 12, don't it? Huh? And that broke the ice. then I could deal with it. Okay? Now, you have to recognize, you know, I'm a lousy sponsor. You know, there's one person in this room that I tried to sponsor. Well, we got there, but I don't have patience. My feeling is, let's get it done. Okay? Let's get it done. Okay? I mean, it's like, you give me an idea. When I was back in Indianapolis, and they gave me one of these big, fancy Ford cars, the same one the Highway Patrol uses. Okay? And, you know, 60, 70 miles an hour, that's just a number. Okay? You know, that's the way I live my life, always have. Okay? So I want to get it done and get it over with. So I'm a lousy sponsor. I know the big book well, and I'm going to talk to you a little bit about that, how I got involved in that too. But I had to learn what was in the big book. I got an outline of my hands. Came out of a guy who was out of Los Angeles, and he said some guy came out of a nut house in Santa Monica and wrote this outline. Can't remember his name. Okay? But he wrote this outline. And he says, you can teach the big book out of this. And he says, you're a teacher. I'll let you start doing it. So I started doing it. Okay? Put it together using his outline, adjusting a little bit for some changes and so on and so forth, and we're doing it. I then was on my way to Santa Maria one week, and I had this tape. A guy rented a room for me, and he had a stack of tapes he left behind. One of the tapes says, teaching the 12 steps. So I throw it in the thing and driving down the road and says, hello, my name is Bob Stonebreaker. Name right on the tape. And he said, we're going to talk about the fourth dimension group. Okay? Any of you have heard of Joe and Charlie's tapes? That's where they got started, was with the fourth dimension group. That's how they got started with this approach, with their approach. They and Stonebreaker met with a football player in Florida on the basis that people were using the big book and didn't understand, hadn't laid it out in a logical way to understand what it said. Stonebreaker comes out of the nut house. Okay? Oh, he admits it's young. By the way, he's a whale of an artist, in case you're interested. And he comes out of there and goes to L.A. and Santa Monica and started a program down there. And he produced this thing. And then, his name and his phone number and everything are on this tape. So I pick up the phone. Call Richmond, Indiana. I says, you know a guy named Bob Stonebreaker? He says, he was here about 10 minutes ago. I said, well, his phone number isn't any good. He says, oh, yeah, he changed it. Here it is. He gave it to me. Okay? He gave it to me. And you talk about a guy that can teach the big book. It's like, you know, you see some people. Remember Bob Newhart? You know what Bob Newhart did before he became a comedian? He was a certified public accountant. You know? I mean, they're all dull son of a bitches anyhow. Well, I'm a certified public accountant. You know that by now, right? Anyhow. But anyhow, what Bob, I never heard him talk. So I got extra tickets for Indianapolis. I said, I got some extra tickets for Indianapolis. And I put them on the email, tried to sell them. He says, well, I'd like to go. I said, Bob, you go to Indy with me, and I will send you the ticket because I want to meet you. I met with him. Sat with him, and I thought, there is no way this guy can do that job. There is no way he can teach that class. It just didn't impress me at all. Okay? I didn't tell him that. Okay, I can say it now because I've already heard him work. Okay. So that year I couldn't go, but the next year I found out he's doing a program in Dayton, which is on my way back, and I'm on my way back to Ohio. So I want to come to Dayton and see you do it. And so I go in there, and he was on, you know, the stuff on in chapter 5, okay? And if you look at chapter 5, where it starts to talk about, you know, the whole thing about there is a solution and how we, you know, how we put this whole thing together. When you look at, when they go through the first section, it talks about the program, how the steps and everything work, okay? And then the next page is a paragraph that basically tells you how not to do it. Okay? Most people have never even bothered to read that. But here's the one that says, here's how to do it, and here's how you don't do it. Don't run it on your own. Okay? That's the best meeting I've ever been to in my life. And what a showbiz. The guy was dynamite. Okay? So, we run out of time. But those of you who are newcomers, God, I'm glad you're here. It always makes me feel good, people coming in, getting started, and, you know, find yourself a sponsor. Attending the meetings isn't the solution. The solution is in the steps. I'll say it one more time. Attending the meetings is not the solution. The solution is in the steps. What do you get in a meeting? Help! Right? Help. Find somebody. Get a sponsor. Okay? And, you know, I was in a meeting, you know. By the way, those of you here from the Monday night meeting, I'm not going to introduce myself ever again as an out-of-towner, okay? So you're stuck with me, okay? Okay? It's the best meeting I have been to anywhere in the valley, okay? Too bad for you ladies, it's a men's-only meeting, but it is a tremendous meeting, okay? And so, you know, but work yourself into the project, get a sponsor, and find out what it is like to live a good life. Is it perfect? No. I got an idiot working on a sprinkler system that can't hardly find the sprinkler heads, okay? No, it's not him, it's another one. I have a fifth wheel that a guy can't even put the awning on it right, okay? I got a car that somewhere oil's disappearing. I don't know where it's going, okay? And the guy, and I go back to the mechanic, you know, the guy just put a lot of work into it. It should be better and it's worse, okay? So are things going to make it go good? No. But I know not to scream about it. I'm trying to get a medical thing done. It's called a bone scan. They think osteoporosis. I don't have osteoporosis, but they think I have osteoporosis. They're trying to do a bone scan, and they want them to have the old bone scans to compare the new ones to, so that they can make some reasonable decisions. You'd think I'd just walk into the place that did the old ones and have them send it over to the other one. Nope. Or that I could get copies. Nope. I got to go from the old doctor to my primary doctor and then back to the scanning area, okay? How long do you think that takes? Well, it takes more than 14 days because it's been 14 days and they haven't got a damn thing yet, okay? But, do I get upset? No. Call up and reschedule for the last part of July. By the last part of July, I'll probably get something done. Guy with a camper. I don't need a camper anyhow. He'll get to it. Okay? So I'm saying, it teaches you how to live your life. The big book is not a book in alcoholism. It's a book in how to live your life in a reasonable manner without getting mad at everybody else. Okay? I have a very close friend, okay, that has never, he's been sober for a long time, and he's never figured that out. So he is sober, but he has no sobriety. Okay? And that'll kill you. Thanks for listening to me.